defiantly, wears a head covering, and has learned to speak Arabic. Another young woman who grew up and remains a charismatic Catholic. Another who left the Mormon faith for a liberal Christian denomination. Secular Jews in Israel. Observant Jews in Canada and the UK. One of only 100 and some Buddhist converts in Norway. A Canadian teacher of courses on angels. A would-be Wiccan in Finland. An international assortment of Anglicans with an even larger assortment of beliefs. A still larger group of other Christians, including dress-wearing and makeup-shunning conservative Pentecostals, devout Baptists who attend every program their churches offer, and a Benedictine monk. And a host of folks who have an interest in the sacred, but not in any sort of organized religion. These are just a few of the ways that people express their spirituality today. And the list that you just heard is only a small sample of my own personal friends. For most of us living in a cosmopolitan city like Toronto, the list would be equally diverse. Spirituality is universal, but people choose to define and live it in incredibly varied ways. Let me tell you about another friend of mine. I'll call her Susan. Susan and I went to Regent College together in the 1990s. Susan is a caring, thinking, creative person. She became an ordained pastor in a well-known evangelical church. But for various reasons, she left that life, and with it, her Christian faith as well, to become a spiritual director of quite another sort. In her online spiritual coaching, Susan expresses well our contemporary concept of spirituality, although it does make me sad that this quote comes from her. Susan says, "You can create exactly the kind of spirituality you want. Half this and half that, with a dash of X and a sprinkle of Y. You can special order. And once you find the perfect combination, you can and will change it again." Well, I can see the appeal in mixing and matching elements of our spirituality, the way we mix and match our clothes or our furniture. If you get tired or frustrated with something, just toss it out and get something new. But I think that a simmering confusion lies just under the surface of this approach to spirituality. It reminds me of the people of Athens that we read about in Acts today. They were intensely interested in everything spiritual, and they would talk about it all day long. The great missionary Paul had no trouble at all engaging them right in the middle of the marketplace, kind of like us going out to the cafe or the shopping complex and talking to people about God or spiritual things. These people had statues of every god they could think of in Athens, but they still weren't sure if they had it right. To cover all their spiritual bases, they dedicated an altar to an unknown god. They were confused, and they owned up to it. Many of us today, including Christians, maybe some of us here today, admit that we are confused about spiritual things as well. So it seems that with spirituality, the more things change, the more they stay the same. With all the confusion out there about spirituality, we need some guidance that we can count on. Since we're here today in a self-identified Christian church, let's ask the obvious question. What is spirituality in a Christian context? Even limiting spirituality to Christian flavors gives us lots of options for a wide variety of tastes. Just in Anglican circles, we've got high church on the one end of the spectrum, like a cathedral with its smells and its bells. On the other end of the spectrum, we've got low church, kind of liturgy light, I call it, focused on learning from the best of church tradition, but keeping the Bible front and center. It sounds a lot like what we try to do here at The Res, and you can let us know if we succeed at that or not. Then there are all kinds of other Anglican groups in between the two poles, everything you can imagine. And we haven't even mentioned yet all the other Christian flavors, from monastic to Mennonite, and Eastern Orthodox to emergent. With all this spiritual variety within Christianity, it's tempting to go with my friend Susan's idea of taking a little of this and a little of that, whatever seems relevant to our spiritual journey at this moment. And there is something good about appreciating different spiritual expressions. Contemplation, or the arts, or candles, or incense, or music, or liturgy. Being in a dedicated sacred space like a cathedral, or being outside in God's creation. I think it's risky, though, to view spirituality as a buffet table from which we can pick and choose according to our own tastes. We might end up with a diet that isn't as wholesome as it could be. And we can see the truth of this in our everyday life. For example, my 2-year-old would eat only hot dogs and chocolate if she could get away with it. But we, as her parents, realize that she would be missing out if she were to actually carry through with that diet. It wouldn't be good for her. Not just nutritionally, either. A diet limited to only what she likes right now would keep her from trying new things that would bring much delight. And it would keep her from trying other things that would be well worth acquiring the taste of for their richness and their complexity and their longevity. Likewise, if we pick and choose our spirituality just to suit ourselves, we'll miss out on some good things. Perhaps the contemplatives and intellectuals among us might let our spirituality become something that just happens in our heads, and it makes us feel good, but it never seeps into the rest of life. Or the hyperactive sorts among us might let our spirituality become something we have to work hard at all the time, using all our mental and emotional capabilities to achieve. Whether that's a feeling of peace we're after, or a depth of meditation, or even a certain regularity of reading the Bible and praying. No matter how we define Christian spirituality, it's all too easy to make it either airy-fairy on the one hand, or a guilt-inducing exercise on the other. Well, maybe I'm just projecting all my own hang-ups onto these approaches of spirituality, but I suspect you can identify with at least something that I've said here. So back to our question, what is spirituality in a Christian sense? I think it helps to start by putting a capital letter on the word spirituality. Suddenly, it's no longer a fuzzy concept that's open to any and every interpretation. When it is capital S, spirituality, we know at least one important thing. It is somehow related to the life of the capital S Spirit. That is the Holy Spirit and the third person of the Trinity. In today's gospel lesson, Jesus breathes on the disciples, his friends, and tells them to receive the Spirit. The word for spirit, as Duke has already mentioned today, in both New Testament Greek and Old Testament Hebrew, means breath or wind. The Spirit is not a force. Sorry to any of you Star Wars fanatics out there. But it's rather the personal, life-giving, creative, and powerful presence of God himself. In fact, I even hesitate to replace spirit with it in that sentence. I don't want to be simplistic about spirituality, but I think we often overcomplicate it, and I hope that we can begin to be freed from our own conceptions of what constitutes the spiritual. If we think of spirituality as participating in the capital S Spirit, then we don't just receive from God. More than that, we live directly out of God's personal, life-giving, creative, and powerful presence. Do you see the difference? It sounds a bit subtle at first, but it's actually a big deal. We often think we receive God's Spirit or his power to do something, kind of as if the Spirit is a resource, like an oxygen machine that we can plug into whenever we need it and then turn it on. And then when we can breathe again on our own, we turn it off and unplug it. But I don't think that that is what the capital S spiritual life is really about. I think it's more like we live and breathe in the Spirit, like oxygen, and we don't even notice it half the time. That's how close God is to us. We live in him, and he lives in us, as we read this morning. If that's how life in the Spirit is, then our spirituality is not so much about our efforts to make a connection with the transcendent, nor to do with something that we think is officially ministry, like church work or missionary work. It's actually much bigger than all of that. It's about paying attention to the breath of God in every aspect of our lives, and then living with the certainty that God is breathing into us and through us at every moment of every day, whatever we may be doing. Spirituality, or living a life where the capital S Spirit breathes in and through us, turns out to be very down to earth and practical, because it involves our whole lives, at church for sure, but also at work, at play, running errands, cleaning the house, changing diapers, you name it, it's included. This is not rocket science, but it is all about living a life that's animated by the Spirit of God. And because God embraces us so very personally, it will look as different for each one of us as we are different from each other. It's all God's work, but as I see it, we do have some work to do as we figure out how to respond. I think we need to start with becoming aware and then staying aware of what the Spirit is doing. We can't make breath or wind start or end, but we can work with it or against it. Imagine the wind outside. If you walk outside, you can let the wind blow your hair and so that it sticks to your face and you can fight against the wind. Or you can turn so that the wind goes through your hair like a refreshing breeze. We can work with it or work against it. This is also easier said than done, and I realize that. But a place to start is to look at the lives that we have right now and start thinking about ways the Spirit might be interacting with us and the people around us. We could call this the spirituality of everyday life. And this is where it gets both fun and challenging. So let's go to the good news first, the fun. Suddenly everything is fair game to explore the spiritual possibilities. For those of you who like to read and research and learn, there are great books on spirituality of almost everything. Here are some titles just from my own bookshelf. The Other 6 Days, Vocation, Work, and Ministry in Biblical Perspective. Marriage Spirituality. Great with Child, the Spirituality of Pregnancy and Nurturing an Infant. The Suburban Christian, Finding Spiritual Vitality in the Land of Plenty. The Quotidian Mysteries, Laundry, Liturgy, and Women's Work. Which men can do too, by the way, and she points that out in the book. Dakota, A Spiritual Geography of North and South Dakota. And Sacred Space, The Quest for Transcendence in Science Fiction Film and Television. Books like these make us aware of how God is already in every part of our lives, whether we think those parts are trivial or not. And these kinds of books and investigations fire our imaginations for what might be possible. So there's the fun, but I did warn you there would be a challenge. Opening up our everyday life to the Spirit might mean difficult changes to our lifestyle or our values, because we get comfortable with who we think we are. Let me give you an example. I grew up on the East Coast, a big fan of Anne of Green Gables and other books by Ellen Montgomery. Anybody read any of her books? Oh, good, okay, so I'm in a friendly crowd here, great. Well, in many ways, these stories shaped my life by their values. They were like a second Bible to me as a child. So in grad school, I decided to write my thesis on Anne of Green Gables and that series. I figured it would be fun, and it was. I looked into how the sense of imagination portrayed in Anne, in the books, resembled a Christian understanding of the Spirit's creativity. But what I found changed my values. The first book held up, but the rest? Not so much, unfortunately. In fact, I found I could not support their understanding of imagination because it didn't jive with my faith. and I found that other not so great values of Ellen Montgomery, who was herself, of course, a flawed human being, had crept into the rest of the books. What's more, they'd been influencing my understanding of what was important in life. So, L.M. Montgomery fell from the pedestal I had placed her on, and the books no longer had the same place or interest in my life, although I would say the first book remains really great. Now, making a shift like this can be disorienting, and it'll be different for all of us. But it does do us good in the end. It's part of the process God uses to peel away the stuff that's keeping us from experiencing Him in an even more fulfilling and joyful way. And as an epilogue to that story, I did discover other authors who have stayed with me and who have influenced me in better directions since then, and whose writings I appreciate even more. So I'm not so much suggesting that you add something else to a probably already too long to-do list, but rather that as we all leave here and do whatever it is we do all week, whether it be fantastically exciting or ploddingly mundane, we keep our radar on for where God is working. Then we enter into it and see where He takes us. We're an eclectic bunch here at the Res. We're involved in a host of projects, work, and hobbies across the city. Everything from creation care to the practice of law, to acting, to teaching, to healthcare, to homemaking, to music making, to arts and crafts, to Facebooking and tweeting, to parenting and grandparenting, to board game playing, to zombie walks. Imagine the possibilities for God's Spirit to breathe into what we do and how we do it in all those different parts of our life as a community. And imagine how our learning and experience that we pick up as we go along might help to connect the dots for others who are spiritual seekers too. Perhaps especially for our self-proclaimed spiritual but not religious friends. It's exciting, it's scary, it's certainly down to earth. And I suggest it's at the heart of Christian, capital S, spirituality in all the forms that it might take. But with our busy lives, it's hard to stay focused on God long enough to notice where the Spirit is at work, let alone to get involved. So let me leave you with an everyday example and some practical help from the rest of today's service. Our busyness often hits us in the seemingly small things, like eating on the run, essentially consuming our food instead of taking the opportunity to commune with God or those around us, or to even appreciate the food that we're actually eating. And I have to say, I'm as guilty of this as the next person. That's why I need a reminder of what the simple act of eating can be through the communion we'll celebrate together in a few minutes. When we eat together here, we encounter God together. I like Anglican theology because it doesn't say exactly what happens between us and God, or between us and each other, or how it happens. Just that something profound does. Something that's the work of the Spirit. And that something can remind us every time we eat and drink this week that God's Spirit is working in and through us in even those smallest, most routine details of our lives. It's empowering, and it's real. So hold that thought as we continue with our service today. And I pray that God will use that little sip of wine and that little taste of bread to help us to see how the Spirit is already transforming our lives and the lives of those around us this week. Amen.